Feral Audio.
It's time for another Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Hi, how are you? Did I just blow your ears out? Why did I scream at you? I don't know. Happy episode 13. That's crazy. Thank you for hanging in and listening to the show. And I know it's been another very weird, erratic schedule. And hopefully we'll be a little bit more regular. I'm trying to do that more this year. But it's been so great to have people. And I just recorded this episode that you're about to hear with my guests, and it's a delight. It's so much fun to do, and I love finding out things about people that I've known for years, and it's really great. But I want to talk about somebody who is a personal hero of mine, who has been for a really long time, and he's somebody that is universally loved now. But I don't know if I've ever talked about him, and maybe I've told this story before. I can't remember, and I was like scouring things that I've done. Have I talked about it? So if you've heard this before, I'm sorry. Skip ahead. I've got great guests coming up. But you know, it's inauguration day today, and you'll hear this hopefully next week. So hopefully it'll be a week after inauguration day, and God knows what kind of wild spinning ball of fire will be dancing on that day. But anyway, it's just, rough day, raining, scary, a lot going on. And I just was like, you know, I want to talk about somebody that I really admire right now. And that's Alec Baldwin, who we all love Alec Baldwin. He's the greatest. He's a genius, in 8 million different ways. But for me, forever, he was, just this movie star that before his resurgence, before I think like way before 30 Rock, but like he did that movie, The Cooler, that he was so amazing in. And he sort of came back and would like prove like, oh, he's this amazing actor. I mean, if you go back and see like Glengarry Glen Ross and you're like, oh, he's legit. He's really good. But there was this long period where he was just this hot, guy. I remember he was in a movie called Miami Blues. And of course, Beetlejuice. And I'm just going off the top of my head. What else? I'm sure major. Oh, Hunt for Red October. I think that was him. Anyway. So when I was in college, this was around the time, I mean, this would have been like late 90s. He was kind of known then. I think the last movie he had done at that time, he had done a movie called The Marrying Man with Kim Basinger. Remember that, Jim? And so anyway, it was 97. I was in college. Wake Forest had the Year of the Arts, which was they wanted to celebrate art for the year, and they did all these great things. And I remember the opening convocation was Beverly Sills, the opera singer, who gave a really incredible speech and said something that really has stayed with me for now 20 years. When she just said that, if you're ever worried about art going away, that there'll always be a need for it. From the beginning of time, she said something so eloquent that I'm going to botch and ruin like I love to do with things. But basically, it's like from the beginning of humanity, we've needed to have cave paintings and storytelling, and we've needed this thing. It's a necessity. It's not frivolous. It's not something that we've just, decided was, this decadent little dessert. It's vital. It's in us to create. It's in us to need to consume art. And she said there'll always be a need for it. It will take different forms. It will go through really rough patches and periods, but it will always be in us to need it and to do it, which I thought was so beautiful. And it's true. But we had all of these special events lined up for the year, and we were doing all kinds of things. We did a new play festival and all these things. But one of the greatest things that our theater department offered was they had connections with James Earl Jones and Alec Baldwin to give these master classes. And for a one day they would do actors from the theater department would do scenes in front of an audience. And then this teacher would critique and give notes and feedback and in front of an audience. And it'd be this great thing. So we all had to audition with scenes that we did. And then they picked like 20 scenes, and they were like and then you would pick out of a hat if you got picked to do one of the scenes, and then they drew it out of a hat, and either you got James Earl Jones or Alec Baldwin. And everybody wanted James Earl Jones because at the time it was, he's this legend. He's James Earl Jones. He's done all these amazing things. We had already even studied him in theater class because of The Great White Hope. And he's the first African-American man to be on Broadway, I believe. I'm probably very wrong about that. That's probably Paul Robeson or something. I don't know what I'm saying. Anyway, he's a big deal. He's James Earl Jones, of course. And Alec Baldwin, which was sort of like, you know, Chris Pratt. Like, oh, cool, that guy. I mean, he's fine. He's good. He's great. Like, nothing against him, but I really want this master teacher. So I drew, my friend Heather Cowan and I were doing a scene from Baby with the Bathwater, because that's what you do when you are a funny weirdo that doesn't really get understood in college theater. You do Durang, because that's what everyone does. They all do Christopher Durang plays. So we did Baby with the Bathwater. Our scene got in the mix. We pulled out Alec Baldwin. And we were genuinely bummed because we were like, oh, man, what is this guy going to teach us? He's the hot movie star. Okay. So we went and saw James Earl Jones's class first. He did that like a month or so before Alec Baldwin's class happened. And James Earl Jones was lovely and stately and wonderful and everything. You know, he had that incredible signature laugh, and everything that was put up in front of him, he was just ha 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 ha, wonderful, you are fantastic, I look at you and I see the truth, or whatever. And it was, you know, that's my brilliant James Earl Jones impression. Why don't I get cast doing that? He was great, but it was like your grandfather giving you a quarter and going, good luck out there in the world. And it was great, and it was a very perfectly lovely class. And then a month later, the Alec Baldwin class started with us backstage, like rehearsing and everything, and we're sort of getting ready for it. I'm not really sure. This guy comes in and sits down in like sweatpants and a gym bag. And it's like, hey, guys, what's going on? It was Alec Baldwin just hanging out with us before the class. It was the first time I'd ever been around any movie star, like in that way where I was like hanging out with them. And it was like, oh, he's such a person and so like normal. And he had to make a phone call. He had to call Kim Basinger, he was married to at the time, and check in and tell her he was there, like just any, you know. And class was so intense. He gave the most, it went on for, I remember it was several hours, and he got, and our scene was the first one that he picked. He wanted to see, he's like, I love Christopher Durang. I want to see this play. I want to see this scene. And he got up on stage with us, was hitting us with the scripts. I mean, in an incredible way, like, and just like, what are you really saying there? He gave one of the best acting classes I've ever had in my life. And I had no idea what I was prepared for. And he was tough, and he was smart, and he was funny, and he was everything, and he was so inspiring. And of course, now you look back and you're like, yeah, he trained with David Mamet, and he has this major theater background. I didn't know any of this about Alec Baldwin at the time. And he then excused the audience and said, I want to just talk to the actors now. And basically just said to us, I want you just always, he's like, I've had a very lucky career. I've been very lucky and I've done a lot of shit. And this is, of course, way before he had done stuff where, you know, where everyone like loves him for now. I mean, 30 Rock, The Departed, everything that he's, you know, so wonderful in now. And he was like, always do what challenges you. Always do the thing that you, he's like, because now's the opportunity. You're in school. You're never going to get these opportunities to do really challenging work. He's like, you know, when you're lucky as an actor, you do crap for money. And it was so great because I didn't go to a theater school. I didn't go to a school that was at all talking about when you're out in the business doing this. And none of us were even asking those questions. We weren't thinking that way. And yet he talked to us as if we were equals, and he was giving really, really incredible, you know, career advice. And the following year, instead of doing this like ridiculous farce, I listened to Alec Baldwin and I did a 3-hour long Carol Churchill play about the Romanian Revolution that I still don't understand. It's called Mad Forest, and it was insane. And I had to speak Romanian, and people were dogs and vampires, and it was incredible. And I was like, Alec Baldwin told me to do this, because it was, and he was right. I would never have the opportunity to do that to this day, 20 years later. you know, I have run into him several times, that, you know, with, and, you know, not, he obviously doesn't remember me, but I have seen him, and he is full of passion and joy. He's like, he is one of the most unabashed, is that a word? I don't know. I think it's a word. I don't know if I said it right. He doesn't make any excuses about being who he is. I mean, he gets in trouble. It's from being too passionate. He believes everything that comes out of his mouth. He's also so full of joy. And I've seen him at Saturday Night Live, and I know they love him there, and he's hosted a million times. But he loves comedians. He loves young voices. He wants to be a part of it. And now he is back on Saturday Night Live playing the man who is now our president, fearlessly and ruthlessly and poisonously funny. And what a champion he is. What a beautiful thing that that's happening right now, that we get him, because this is somebody who really is fighting the good fight, who could easily rest on his laurels and just be Alec Baldwin, the movie star. And instead, he has work to do. It feels like he's doing really challenging work right now. That's got to be hard for him on a personal level. Yet he doesn't give a shit. He's Alec Baldwin, and he's gonna do what's right. And so, thanks, Alec. I think you're pretty wonderful, and we should all be like you. All right, let's just jump right in.
Let's start telling stories.
That's how we do it?
That's how we do it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. Steve Agee and Alec Mappa. Hi, guys.
Hi, Drew.
This is wonderful.
You didn't tell me Steve Agee was here.
I know.
Well, I didn't know Drew was going to be here.
I didn't know anything was going to happen today.
I have a little crush on Steve Agee.
You do?
Oh, that's so large. I enjoy that in a man. I like that.
I am a bear.
Like a man I can climb. So do we jump right into it?
Jump right into it. Or just we talk about whatever. We can do a little, you know, foreplay chatter. We
all
want,
right,
and then
here's
we go
the foreplay chatter. Congratulations on your stellar run in New York City.
Oh, thank you, honey.
I reposted on your behalf, and
you were so sweet. Thank you for doing that. So you did. Thank you. It was a dream.
I'm one of the few people in Los Angeles who's genuinely happy for their friends when they do something successful.
You're the one.
That's you. You really are. You know what I've got to say? You always are. Yeah. And even today, like, you walked in and you saw Johnny Pemberton, and you're like, I love, you know, this, and you know Steve. And you're like, you're very complimentary.
Well, here's the thing on that. And this is an absolute kind of spiritual truth. Nobody does what you do. Do you
That's
know what I mean?
Truth.
It's like,
you're
I
right.
don't do what you do. And right. I have had auditions where the selections have been me, you, Drew, a Sam Pancake, and Jack Plotnick.
Yep.
And those are like all amazing people. And it's really going to be about who they want to work with on this one.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be about who's better at being Jack or who's better at being Sam. It's going to be about, like, you know, so when I see people do something great, it's like, that's what they do. But if somebody starts going out and dressing up at me as me, then that's fucked up. When that strange day happens.
My God, Steve, watch out.
Yeah. I'm
stop,
glad I didn't
stop
wear
dressing
my
up like
now.
Alec.
Sure, yeah.
No, but like, you and I, Steve, have been up for the same. We're all in this together. Mm-hmm. Like, we go out for the same things, and you get to a certain point, you're like, it's not competition.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
Because competition implies that somebody can work harder and there's a number at the end of the and somebody wins. And it's not that at all. And it's like, oh my God, we have to support each other and be happy for each other. And it's so much more fun when you can actually be happy for people. When you give over that thing where you're like, oh my God, that's so great. Yeah. When you're not sitting there thinking, why am I not winning?
That's
why
a really heavy thing to carry around.
It's
going to block you. It's going to fuck you up.
You know, and it's something
that. It'll give
you a stroke. I get around people who are that way. And I went through a long period in my 20s where
I've
went
been
through
that. Way.
And I was hanging out with people that only perpetuated that.
Right.
And I would call and vent and, you know, like, can you believe that so-and-so got blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I lived in that for quite a while. And it was horrible.
Oh, it's and it's easy to slip back into.
And none of us were doing well.
Right.
Like, none of us were doing anything because we were spending all of our time and energy bitching about people who were doing things.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you're actually, you can be happy for people and you can, you know, also, you know, it's a long slog. It's a long journey into this thing. It's not just like, oh, there's one job and you got to fight all these other bitches out for this job.
It's a marathon.
We do that. And so if you become that person that's always that, gross.
It's going to hold you up.
It will hold you up.
It will hold you up.
And and you're right. We all do different things, and this industry is always tries to like, you know, group people together mm-hmm. in terms of like whether it's like character actors, yeah. comedy actors, gay characters, or whatever it yeah. is. But ultimately, you're right. It's going to come down to so many other things. It's going to come down to one person and making a decision in the room, going, "Oh, I think we need to do XYZ," right. and that's what it is.
And we all work like, eventually.
Exactly, we all yeah. get things. Things come, and you keep doing it, and then they go, right. and then you're back at it again. So you don't want to be like the one who, you know, screwed everyone over to get the thing you got.
How long have you been doing this now, this thing?
I have been out here since 99.
No, holy this shit. Podcast.
Oh, this since yeah. 99.
Since I've been sitting here.
Yes.
18 years.
Holy shit.
I have been doing this podcast since this summer, last summer.
Oh, okay.
So I've it's been sporadic because of just schedules and everything. So I'm just getting started. So this is, I think you guys are number 13.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, lucky 13.
Lucky. Yeah. Number 13, and it's inauguration day.
Oh my God, I know. And hopefully we'll be up next week, and so it won't be too far off from
all right,
that.
All right.
But oh my God, I know. Crazy, right?
So who tells the story first? How does this go?
Either of you. Do you want to tell a story, Alec?
Okay, yeah. So I was in San Francisco for Christmas vacation uh-huh, with my family. Nice. I haven't been in 3 years because my family all hates each other. I have siblings up there. I have 3 siblings, and none of them get along. They have very strong personalities, and my family's wow. that type of family. We all behaved for my mother, and then when my mother died, everything fell apart.
Wow.
You know? Uh-huh. Sure. I would try to get everybody together at Christmas time, and I'd cook a turkey, and then people wouldn't stop fighting. So I did
my
that
God.
Three...
Now, where are you in the line?
I'm third out of 4.
Okay,
so
okay.
I'm like the party clown in my family. Okay. That's how I learned to be loved, right?
Sure.
I was like, everything's fine!
Yeah.
So, I did Christmas 3 years in a row, and then finally I was invited after that to a Christmas party where people wanted to be together and people wanted yeah, to have uh-huh. fun. So I was like, fuck you guys, you're fired, I'm not doing this again. Yeah. And my family was literally like, what are you doing? Why aren't you having Christmas?
That's I'm
like,
3 years ago?
This was years and years and years ago. I was like, were you there? Did
yeah.
you remember that?
Right.
You
right.
find out who the glue in your family is
right.
when they yeah. died, and you're like, oh, there's no more glue.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So since then, nobody's gotten together.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So my siblings in San Francisco and my father now lives in San Francisco with his new wife, because my mom died years ago. They never see each other, and they only ever see each other when I come up. So finally, you know, I have a kid. He's 12 years old, and I was like, let's go up and see my family.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was kind of, you ever have one of those visits where it's like, I fucking have to see my family?
Yeah.
It's
oh, yeah.
Too long. It's a duty,
and
yeah.
they visit me all the time because I'm fun, right?
Right. Sure,
yeah.
And you're, I mean, do you like take them to fun, you know, fun
yeah,
stuff?
You
and
know,
then take them when
fun,
you're like on a show?
Do
you take them to
tickets and stuff? Yeah. Yeah. Tickets yeah. to a show, yeah. Disneyland, the whole
exactly.
thing. I mean, LA is a great city to show off.
You're
it's
giving
like,
me a
yeah.
panic attack. Right.
Okay,
all this
okay, okay, wait for it. So, so they all hate each other. So I was literally racing all over the Bay Area to see one of them at a time, you know, because getting them all together.
Because they
won't
get together.
Do it.
Okay.
So my brother's a big stoner, and I've been having a marijuana renaissance. We were talking about mm-hmm. it before the show.
Yeah,
I have
yeah,
a
yeah.
vape oil that I really enjoy called Sativa. It's very mild.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like wrapping your head in gauze. It's kind of like stuff that's normally agitating in real life,
mm-hmm.
you find tolerable.
Yeah.
Like today, inauguration.
Right.
Like I'm not
right.
stoned yet.
You're functioning.
But if I stone and I watch the inauguration, I'd be like, whatever. You know?
Right, 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 right.
The world's coming to an end.
Yeah.
The apocalypse is near. Oh, who cares?
Right.
So, and that's a nice feeling.
Right.
So my brother had edible marijuana, and it was a gummy. It was a gummy mm-hmm. form, and, uh-huh. it was in a quadrant. And they're beautifully packaged. It looked like candy that you would get at a Mexican bodega. You know,
yeah.
like, so, oh, that's a strange looking candy. I'll give it a try.
So, and you had just a quarter of it?
So there's, it's, you,
it's
peel
already
it,
divided.
You peel it open and there's 4 gummies in there.
Okay, sure.
So I'm like, and it said Sativa. So I was like, Sativa.
That's my jam.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah.
So
right.
should I take the whole thing? No, you know what? I've never taken this Sativa before, so I'll just take a quarter. My husband and I get a babysitter and we have a date night out in the Castro, just the two of us. I sit down for a drink and I'm the most high I've ever been in my entire life. I can see my house from space high.
Oh,
like
my God.
Sandra Bullock in Gravity High.
Yeah.
And it's not enjoyable. No. I don't know if that's, has that ever happened to you?
Oh, completely. Oh, yeah.
It's like, and Jamie's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I was like, I'm too high. I'm so high and I can't stop it. And I've been here before and I know I just got to breathe through it. And he's like, fucking breathe through it because we got a babysitter. This is our first time alone since we've been with your crazy family all week long.
Right.
I want to have a goddamn drink.
Right.
That's my husband being sympathetic.
I love Chad.
So I'm like, okay, let me step outside. I'm just going to step outside and deep breath my way through this.
Oh, shit. I know it all too well.
Yeah.
My brother is babysitting my kid back at the hotel, right? So no amount of deep breaths is helping. All of a sudden, every fearful thought I'm having is absolutely magnified.
Oh, my God.
You know, and it just gets even worse. And all of a sudden, I'm living my entire existence on this planet in one day. I'm thinking about being 80 years old. I'm thinking about being infirmed. I'm thinking about losing all my money. Yeah. I'm thinking about being destitute. I'm thinking, and I can't stop it. I really honestly can't stop. Because and then this is what happens. I start getting panicky about breathing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because
right.
all of a sudden in my head, I'm like, what if I can't breathe? What if all of a sudden I stop breathing? And so now my breath is fearful.
It's not an involuntary function.
No, yeah,
it's something you have to make.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
exactly. So he's like halfway through a beer. I'm not kidding. We've been gone for like 45 minutes.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, we have to go back to the hotel.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's like, I fucking hate you. So he downs the rest of his drink. We Uber back to the hotel. It's a big hotel room. So my kid's on the computer. So I could be living or dying. He won't give a shit. He's playing Minecraft, right? He's really not in it at all. I drag my brother to the bathroom. And he literally spends the next hour talking me down from the high.
Oh, my God.
And he explained it to me in such a brilliant way. He's like, you're in San Francisco. You grew up here. A lot of shitty stuff happened here.
Yeah.
You know,
you
grew up here. We grew up really wealthy. My father lost all his money when he was, when I was just starting high school. When I just figured out what money was, all the money was gone. Our family kind of fell apart. My mother died in San Francisco. It was just kind of like every shitty thing that ever happened to me happened in San Francisco. And what it did was the pot just brought all of that up. Do you know what I mean? It was
like, it's the holidays. So you're just,
holidays.
Right.
It's kind of like the fear dam broke.
Uh-huh.
It was, and I'm living in San Francisco, and I don't know if you've ever gone back to your childhood hometown, but when you're there.
I have a hard time with it as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But when you're there, all of the stuff subconsciously of your upbringing comes up.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So without even thinking that that's what happened. That's what happened.
Sure.
So I'm in the bathroom, hotel bathroom with my brother, and he's like, listen to me all a second. All that stuff that just happened to you historically in your life in this city, it was just a movie. It's just a movie. It's not real.
Oh, that's so good.
It's just a movie. It's not real. It's a movie that fucking freaked you out. It's a movie that was so scary that you thought you were going to die. And I was like, oh my God, it's just a movie.
Oh.
It was just a movie. And all of a sudden it was that thing that where you cross over and it's like, oh, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was my aha moment that all the shitty things that ever happened to you, you can choose to look at it. The way that you detach from it in an objective way is like, oh, that was a movie. And if it was a scary movie that really freaked you out and you walked out with your friends, you would be like, oh my God, that was so scary. And then you'd laugh about it.
Sure.
You'd be like, oh fuck, that was really, and he goes, and here's the thing. You were the star of that movie. And I was like, and that's the thing that as an actor really pushed me over.
Playing
I was
into
like,
that ego part.
Oh my God.
Star.
I was amazing in that movie. Oh, I went through so much.
I was
so
the tragic
much.
Hero of that movie.
I overcame so much. And so I was still high, but I wasn't terrified anymore.
That's so good.
And now since then, and I feel like, honestly, I went to San Francisco to have that epiphany.
Yeah,
because since then I've come to realize that consciousness and how we're experiencing life, because it'll be over, we'll be gone, and our bodies will putrefy and turn into ash. But who knows? Maybe our consciousness will go back to the universe, and maybe it's gone forever. But while it's happening, it's a movie.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of, you can choose to be freaked out by it, or you can just go, okay, well, this is a scary part. I don't like this.
Right. Well, and the retelling of it as well is what really makes the movie. It's like you live through it so that you can tell it and pass it on and right. know and like learn from it and go, okay, right. what was the next thing? And that's so, yeah. it's also a great way of looking at everything going, you know what? Because it's so easy to be just constantly in fear, especially with what's going on right
yes.
now.
Yes.
And we can get in our heads about anything and everything. Uh-huh. And when, you know, we're like, I don't know if like nuclear codes are going to be tweeted at 3 a.m. by right. someone maybe in charge of uh-huh. all of us, or if, you know, or just, you know, some horrible person could walk in right now with a gun. Like there right. are these things that happen.
A million things can happen.
That, like,
I'm flying into Fort Lauderdale tomorrow.
Wow.
To Ugh. Go on a gay cruise. So yeah. it's kind of like,
well, there you go.
Can you imagine if you had taken the remaining 3/4 of that?
Oh,
gummy?
I know.
I'd be dead.
I know.
I was thinking about that too, because I was like, oh, it's sativa.
Right.
That yeah. can't hurt.
Well, that's
me.
The thing, because it's sativa and indica are just the two.
I think it's edibles. I'm not good with edibles.
And nope. it just depends on how many milligrams are in there as well, because the sativa is the upper.
Yes.
And so it can be really good, yeah. but if it's too much, it makes you paranoid and freak out. And the yeah. indica is the big downer.
It's the big downer.
And that's the one that you're going to go, oh, you know. But
well,
it also has
indica
so much
is
to do
the
with
body high. It's the one that relaxes you and puts you asleep.
Right.
Sativa is the mental.
Yes.
It's the one that gets you fucked up in your head.
Yeah.
Right.
But
right.
I'd never had that experience where it was like too much, where I was overwhelmed by it.
I had someone.
So unenjoyable.
Yeah, no, it really is. Yeah. I had someone that, I don't know, as a friend brought over like a lemon, like a poppy seed, like pot muffin or
right,
thing.
Right.
And it was from a dispensary. And he was like, it's kind of strong. Don't eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I took a bite of it and it was disgusting because it just tasted like pure pot.
Yeah.
And I love pot and I yeah. love the taste of it, but it was okay. so much. I was like, I don't like this.
You
and
love
so,
the taste of pot?
Well, yeah, the smoke. Yeah, I actually do. Yeah, I real do. I real do. That's what I said.
Real
I real do.
Do.
I'm so high right now. No, but it was just this really just strong. And I was like, ugh, that's too much.
Right.
So I took one bite of it and threw the rest of it away because mm-hmm. I was just like, I was so high for like 8 hours or
for
something.
For that one bite.
For the
from
whole
one bite.
Day. Yes, from yeah. one bite. And I smoke pot, you know, fairly regularly.
Yeah.
And so like you'd think you would be used to it, but then edible can really take you down in a way that I was sweating so badly. I was so in my head. I was like, everyone hates you. I had nothing to do all day.
Right.
That was a day that I was like, I can just like get a little high and maybe I'll walk over to a movie and
yeah.
have the day off, like
yeah.
nothing really pressing to do. And of course, all these things started coming in. Like I had phone calls were coming in. I couldn't answer them. I had emails. It was
right.
so horrible. I had to go to a picnic later that night and I had to call in and call a friend and say, I'm too high. I can't leave the house.
High.
And of course, my friend's laughing and going, I'll come pick you up. I go, I can't be
the
around people right
of
now.
All events.
Right. I know a picnic
yeah.
I couldn't do.
But when you're in that
hours
space,
later.
That fearful space, it's like I could be in a disfiguring car accident on the way there.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, it's like the thing about like certain drugs and like with like booze or with like cocaine, or those are the two that I know the most about.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of drugs I don't, you know, have never really that much experience
yeah.
with. You think you're great and you're being a maniac.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, and you think, oh, I'm doing great. This is the best
right.
ever. Pot's the opposite. You're like, I think I'm the worst person ever. And
yeah.
everyone's looking at you going, you're
yeah.
fine.
You're fine.
Like, you're not doing anything
you're fine.
Wrong. You're not acting. You know, you
yeah.
might act a little weird to the people that know you. And,
yeah.
you know, we can tell now when people kind of walk up and you're like,
right.
oh, they're high. Whatever.
Right.
Who cares? But, like, it in your
but
mind.
But I never had an unhappy high when I was in high school.
Wow.
Like, high school, I remember the first day of high school, somebody called me a faggot, and I was like, I'm not going to last 4 years of this, you know? I was young enough for that to hurt,
day
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
It's
sure,
like, now
sure.
if somebody says faggot, I'm like, hey, girl, what's
thank
up?
Thank you.
So, like, and so the next day, somebody at lunch offered me a joint, and this is San Francisco High School, and I smoked, and then somebody called me a faggot, and I literally laughed.
Somebody
and,
called yeah. you a faggot in San Francisco?
In yeah.
oh,
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
What
but,
a dickhead.
I know.
But, I smoked pot all through high school. I didn't give a shit about anything.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was so
yeah.
happy. But now something strange, like if the chemistry wrong, I'll have a bad high.
Yeah. And edibles, too. Like, it has so much to do with what you've eaten and right. mentally. Like, you know, I didn't even think about until, you know, your brother reminded you that you're in San Francisco and you have a lot right. of emotional stuff attached yeah. to it.
And it's not real. Like, the minute I heard that, it's not real.
Right.
Your thoughts are just thoughts. They're not real.
Yes.
It just put on a different movie. Just kind
yeah.
of like,
yeah, yeah,
when
yeah.
I thought of it in those terms, it was a big game changer for me.
Yeah.
When I was 28... I think I was 27 or 28. I was at the Groundlings. I was taking classes uh-huh. at the Groundlings. I had a year between Writer's Lab and advanced class. Uh-huh. So my girlfriend Lori and I at the time moved to Oregon just for a year. We're okay. like, we'll just wait in Oregon. And so we were up there.
Isn't that crazy how much of our lives we devoted to the Groundlings. Like we plan your life around that. But yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So for Thanksgiving that year while we were up there, I was working just a minimum wage job, so I couldn't afford to fly home for Thanksgiving. And we had a friend, Tony, who was like everyone in town. We were in Ashland, Oregon, the small Shakespeare
sure. yeah.
festival town. Our friend Tony worked at this coffee shop. Everyone in town knew him, this long-haired hippie, and everyone was would go to his house for Thanksgiving who didn't have anywhere to go. And so Lori went to some friends who lived in Sacramento for the day, and I was like, I guess I'll go to your house. And so we spent the day drinking while we were waiting for the turkey to cook, and it was taking a long time. And so we were all on empty stomachs, drinking, playing pool in his garage. And at one point, it was like 1 or 2 in the afternoon. We'd just been drinking all day. I was fucked up and I just wanted food. And I get up, we're playing pool in his garage. I get up to go to the bathroom. So I go into the house. I'm walking past the kitchen. I'm the only one in the room and I see a platter of cookies.
Oh my God.
On the table. Like, I mean, a mountain of cookies. Yeah. And I was like, that's a lot of cookies. No one is going to notice a few missing.
Right.
So I shovel like 6 cookies into my mouth.
Oh my God.
Eat them. I go back in the, I go to the bathroom.
Fuck.
I go back into, yeah, exactly.
Oh,
I go
no.
back into the garage. About half an hour later, Tony goes, oh, hey, you guys, last night, Emily and I made pot cookies for dessert.
How big were they? Were they like this?
They were like they were smallish cookies.
All right.
And I go, you made pot cookies?
Oh,
he goes, yeah. I go,
fuck.
Are they on a tray on the table? He goes, yeah.
Oh,
I go, dude, I just ate like 6 of those. And one of the girls in the garage starts laughing like to tears. And I go, what the fuck is so funny? She goes, I had half of one of those cookies like 2 hours ago.
And
I am high out of my mind.
Oh, shit.
And I start panicking.
Oh, my God.
And then cut to like...
Did you make yourself throw up? Or?
No, because I have a fear of throwing up.
Oh,
that's another thing.
Really?
I haven't thrown up in almost 30 years.
Wow. I love throwing up.
Wow. I do too. When I'm in that place, I love it.
I wish I could. But so cut to like a couple hours later, I'm sitting in their living room and I have lost all motor function skill. Like I can think crystal clear. I can't talk or move. And I'm sitting on the couch like a statue. And dinner is finally ready, and everyone gets up, and they're eating, and I still can't move. I'm just sitting on the couch, and his girlfriend comes up to me, and she's talking to me like I'm a little kid. She's like, Steve, would you like me to bring you a tray of food? And it just took everything to just nod yes. And she brings over a TV dinner tray with all this turkey and mashed potatoes, and it smelled so fucking good. And she puts it on my lap, and I can't work my hands. I can't work my hands to get the food to my mouth.
Oh, no.
So I just sit there, and I start crying.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And they're like, Steve, are you okay? And I can't talk. I've never been that high before or since. I've been dosed on acid. I've had trips that were nowhere near as bad as this. At one point, and it lasts forever.
Also, time slows down, so you think it's even longer than it is.
And you can't even just close your thinking, my husband's like, just close your eyes and lie down.
No,
and I'm like, you can't even
do that.
The feeling,
you can't
and then not
do that.
I like, I just had to leave. And I go, I managed to get up. Enough time's gone by that I can start moving. And I get up. Tony's like, where are you going? And I just had to lie to get out of there. I was like, I got to call my parents to wish them a happy Thanksgiving. And he goes, well, you're coming back. He's like, you want to use our phone? I'm like, no. And I get in my van. I drove a van at the time.
You drove?
You can't feed yourself, but you can drive a car.
He's lives on a hill, like San Francisco steep. I'm in the van.
Oh,
and
shit.
It feels like the back of the van is going to flip over the front. I only live like 4 blocks away, so I make it home. I turn on every light in the apartment. I go into my bedroom and I turn on the TV and I just huddle in the corner watching, trying to focus on the TV. Next thing I know, it's like 4 in the morning. My girlfriend has finally come home and she walks in. Every light is on. The TV's blaring. I have luckily passed out. I'm asleep. And she shakes me awake. She's like, what the fuck is, why is the TV on? Why are all the lights on? And I opened my eyes and the first thing I thought was, I'm still just as high. I was still just as high and I started crying again. I've never been that high in my life.
Oh my God.
6 cookies. How long did it take? A day? Because I
even
was
the next day. I was still high the next day.
It'll do it. It'll do it. It will stay in you forever.
That's why I like booze.
It gets in
you. I know when to stop.
You can feel it wear off.
Yeah.
And also with booze, you start to feel like, oh, I'm getting a little drunk. I should stop. Yeah. Like, or whatever. Yeah. Like,
I'm good at knowing when to stop drinking.
And no matter how much you drink, in 24 hours, it's done.
Pot takes forever to, when you eat it, hit. It takes like an hour before you start feeling anything.
Are kids still doing the Coke?
Yeah, it's pretty popular.
I had a friend who doesn't live in LA anymore. He always used to have parties in the 90s and always had Coke. So I only ever did it with him. I never bought it on my own because I'm cheap and because I knew rich people who always had it.
Yeah, people kind of always had it.
Yeah, and I kind of enjoyed it while it was there. But I was really cognizant while I was doing it that this is an evil drug.
Yeah,
because I've seen it end so badly for so many different people.
It's terrible. And it's the worst. It's the stupidest thing. And it's with me, I'm just lucky that my chemistry is such that I do very little when I have done it, and I can do very little and be like, I'm good for the night. Whereas I see people next to me that are like, oh, I need more. I need more. I need more.
Because when you have it, then you don't save Coke for a rainy day. You do whatever you have.
You do whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And I am one of
the rare people that have done it and I'm good. After I do a little bit, I go, I'm good on that. I have an insane fear of ODing on it. I'll still do it. Like, it makes no sense.
But I hear the Coke nowadays is cut with so many different things. That's the thing. You have no idea. It's really great,
you know, and you don't really know. I mean, I have done it before when I'm like, this is amazing. This must be what the real stuff is. And then other times you're like, oh, this just feels really, sometimes it can just make you really cranky and cracky feeling. And you're just kind of like,
Drew Drogi, the cranky cokehead.
The limited use cranky.
Everyone out.
You guys, we're done.
I did like the glamour of it because there's something really glamorous about like cutting that line and shaping it and snorting.
I get all of
it.
And I also just, I do enjoy the sensation of this, the way it feels, like the actual physical,
the initial thing,
snorting it in the drip.
And it doesn't
last
that long.
It doesn't last long. That's the other thing too. In 30, 45 minutes, you're done.
Yeah.
But the problem with it is that most people want more. And I'm just somebody, it's rare that I go back for more because what it usually does for me, it's like with coffee.
Right.
Whereas if I have too much coffee, I crash and I have to take a nap.
Right.
So I have like 2 cups of coffee a day. And if I have a third cup of coffee, I need a nap.
Who the fuck are you?
I have this weird
Grandpa Drew.
I know, I'm like, too much coffee.
Cranky on Coke and I get tired on coffee.
I'm taking a lot of coffee nap.
Come join my party.
So you snorted Coke in your play.
I did. What were you doing?
Milk?
No, there's this stuff called inositol that my set designer, Dara Wishengrad,
found. Great name.
I know, isn't it a great name? Yeah. Dara Wishengrad. She's amazing and she did the whole set and it's a vitamin B and it looks just like cocaine. And it works the same and you can snort it and it's totally healthy. It's actually a liver detox.
Right.
And
you're in great shape after you
you're in great shape.
So you would do a show and then take a huge shit as right out of the curtain.
You sure do. You also get a... you get the drip. You get the whole sensation. So for me as an actor, it was very easy to sort of have that going on for me because it was as if I was really doing it.
Did it give you a little boost? Did you
feel
a vitamin
B? It definitely
kind of
like gives you like it like can open things up for a little bit. But it definitely, when you snort it, you're like, this is not drugs for any, you know.
My son has time-released Adderall. For his ADHD. But it literally says on the prescription, methamphetamine.
Really?
It's speed.
It's an upper.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the one time I did Adderall, I hated it so much. It was so much worse for me than cocaine.
What happened? Did you snort it?
I think
I've
told this on the
air
before, but there was a time.
I fucked all night.
I hated it. I was so nervous. I was, you know, I think I've told this on here before, but I was out of control.
You were a ball of fear. You were like,
I've never tried it.
No, I was just, the whole time I was just like, I couldn't relax and I was in a, talk about cranky.
Speed's not relaxing.
No, it's not. I got enough going on in
speed's
my head that
worst.
I don't need this.
DayQuil makes me manicky. Yeah. I can't take it. There's something
I'm afraid to take aspirin. I'm like, ugh, no.
Oh, really?
I did everything in high school and everything like, I had this theory where I should try everything once.
Right.
I don't want to judge everyone unless.
I think so.
Yeah.
So I tried Coke like twice and ecstasy once. And
ecstasy, I think, is kind of overrated. It's okay.
It made me really depressed afterwards.
It's really bad for me after.
I call it mextasy because it's like, meh.
I was crying for like three days.
Really? The very first time I did it, it was incredible. And I was like, I get what this is. And then it was never that good. And I saw like, and I had a lot of, this is when I first moved out here and a lot of people were doing it like every weekend. And I was like, this is long-term not good. And I was having a hard time getting happy naturally. I was like, this is not good for me. And it felt like a 30-day hangover in a way,
on
emotionally.
You had a 30-day gloomy Tuesday.
Yeah. You would just be like, it's really hard to find anything to
Something's
be excited
off,
about.
Yeah.
And I was like, this isn't worth it.
Did you acid?
Once. I've done acid once.
Me too.
When I was in Kentucky.
I got dosed, too.
Oh, you were dosed. Oh, that's horrible.
What does that mean?
That
was too much?
No, someone gave it to me without me knowing it.
Oh, that's not nice. Yeah. What was that?
Not as bad as the fucking six
as
pot
the six
pies.
Cookies. But was it like, was that supposed to be like a prank? Like, let's see what happens.
No, it was at, this sounds so cliche, but it was at a Grateful Dead concert.
All right.
I don't like the Grateful Dead.
I love the Grateful Dead.
You do?
That was my very first episode. I talked about, like, I was revealing that. I bet nobody knew that I loved the Grateful Dead.
Wow.
Because it makes no sense if you know me at all.
This is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I mean,
I don't really listen to that much anymore, but I was obsessed in high school.
I had a friend who was like, I have a free ticket, you want to go? I was like, yep. We went, and we went early because it's a huge, like, the parking lot is just this fair like atmosphere and people partying, and
right,
so someone offered me a joint, I would take a hit or a drink, so it could have happened at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But we were watching the show, and like partway into the show I was like, the speakers looked like, when you look at cement and heat is coming off the cement.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, wow, I thought it was an effect coming out of the speaker.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, turned to my friend who didn't get dosed. I go, do they do this at all their shows? And he didn't know what I was talking about. He's like, yeah, this is a normal show. And I was like, wow, I kind of get it. And
no wonder people like the Grateful Dead. Look at those speakers.
Then it started turning into smoke. And I'm like, fuck, dude, the speakers are on fire. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I was like, look at all that smoke. And he was like, oh, fuck. He goes, dude, I think you've been dosed with acid. And the second he said that, it was like someone flipped a switch in my brain. And it just became a nightmare of like hallucinations.
It wasn't enjoyable.
No.
Well, I don't think it's ever enjoyable when you're dosed, from what I gather, because you have to know so much of acid is knowing going into it.
Knowing what's what and having somebody to walk
you through it.
Yeah.
Because I had an amazing experience on it. Yes, kind of. I mean, it's because I had somebody, I did it with a big group of people when I was in Kentucky and doing Summerstock Theater, and we had a night that like 50 people were doing.
Yes. Kentucky Summerstock.
That's where you really do drugs.
Kentucky Summerstock acid story.
Don't do theater in Kentucky. Do drugs in Kentucky.
I was just in Kentucky.
You were? Where?
all over. I my girlfriend lives in Cincinnati, and we were very close to Cincinnati. The Ark Experience.
What is that?
It's the Creationist Museum.
Well, sort of. It's connected with
that. The guy built an ark.
They built, according to specs from the Bible, a replica of Noah's Ark, and it is massive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Are there dinosaurs on them?
They say there were dinosaurs on the Ark, and they justify it by saying, look, we know it would be ridiculous for giant dinosaurs to be on this Ark. The way they did it was they used babies.
Baby dinosaurs.
They had baby dinosaurs.
Oh, that's adorable. Dinosaurs. I believe them now. You know, you have to have somebody with you when you're doing acid to say, this is normal. Your hand is fine.
Right.
Or whatever, because everything looks weird.
Yeah.
Things are breathing. The walls breathe. You know, all that stuff. And it's different for everybody.
I saw water in the walls. Like, it's like that, you know, do you ever see the back of the, what's the Sparklets water guy?
Yep.
Where you brush your hat.
Shimmering.
And it's, so I would brush my hand against the wall and it would ripple.
Yep.
Like, that's what I remember from being on acid. But I just took it once and I was like, okay, I did this. I don't need to do it again.
I loved it. And it's just not around. I don't see it anymore. I had a really bad experience on mushrooms.
I've never done mushrooms
forever, but then I did them recently. I mean, or recently, like maybe I did them 3 or 4 times. I haven't done them in probably 2 years. But
did you throw up?
I loved them the last couple times I've done them because you just do very little. But they're way more natural and
a little
bit.
They can,
but they're way better than acid because they're just the way more. I mean, if you don't,
it feels more organic. It is more organic. But I used to do them like once a year, like around New Year's Eve, and
what would happen?
I hadn't done them in a few years. I don't hallucinate on mushrooms. Everything's a little brighter, colors are a little brighter, but I laugh.
You can function.
I laughed so hard I thought I was going to, talk about you forget to breathe. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to die because I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
I was like, you're going to have to take a break from laughing to breathe because you're choking on your own mind. Everything was so funny.
Funniest shit.
Because I was with, one time in particular, I was with a bunch of UCB people and we were, I think it was a New Year's trip. We were in Joshua Tree.
That's a funny group.
And we were laughing so hard at the dumbest things that would not even be fun. But these people were making
you'd look at that water bottle and go, look how little this shit is.
Exactly.
And laugh for
that
an hour.
That would make you laugh. Exactly that. And it would, and you would keep going. And then you're like, why am I laughing at that? That's so dumb. But then you look at it again. You're like, it is a really little bottle of water. Oh my God. How can the water even fit in there? How do they get the water in there?
And I have a photo I'll show you of me on mushrooms in Joshua Tree.
I want to see.
Oh, yes. No, but I remember one of the things that made us laugh so hard was that we were at a rental house and they had not one, but 2 VHS copies of Jurassic Park, and that made us laugh so hard.
So
like, just
great.
In case one of them
it's
runs,
like my spare
you
know, copy.
That, you have a backup copy, and it made us laugh for hours. Like that was all it took.
My spare VHS tape,
Jurassic Park, and then we put it on to watch it, and we couldn't get the volume, but we had sound, so we were watching it without volume, and we were laughing at Jurassic Park like it was the greatest comedy of all time.
And that was off of mushrooms.
Yeah.
Have you ever done ayahuasca?
No,
I
haven't.
I'm scared to do ayahuasca.
I would like to because everyone says it's just this incredible, like, you know, spiritual experience.
I feel like San Francisco was my ayahuasca experience because I was just wigged out in a major way.
Like, I haven't been really fucked up on drugs in a while. Like it's been a long time since I've been like, oh my God, I'm so the great. I mean, it's like it's really great when you're just too busy to, and you're just like, I can't do it. And you take it home. Oh my God,
this is me having a conniption at how tiny the Coke can was. I am mushrooms.
That is an amazing picture.
I think that should be their national endorsement. That should be on a billboard.
That's Joshua
Tree.
That's
the greatest. That's so good.
It might have been one of my first times doing it.
Yeah, that's so good. Steve, do you have a story?
Well, I've been on so many podcasts, and so I always tell the crazier story.
Well, and that's why I did this one, because I was like, Steve, that's something you never talk about before.
I was like, oh, I was going to tell a story about waking up this morning and being a little depressed because it's inauguration day and it was raining and I was like, I'm just going to go get coffee. And I walked outside and everything just felt a little off. And I got in my car and I get on the freeway and I'm like, something's not right. It was raining, but I was like, everything looks weird. And I realized I fucking just forgot to put my glasses on.
Oh, my God.
And
oh my
I'm
God.
47. I've never done that before in my life. I've never left the house.
Are you really nearsighted? Are you?
I'm both. I'm near and farsighted.
Wow.
And I really need my glasses. And I was just... I was like, fucking everything is off. Is this because of Trump? And then I look in the rearview mirror and I'm like, I look oh, I'm not wearing my fucking glasses.
Oh, my God.
I've never done that.
How weird is that? Like you had some sort of, you had just some sort of out of body, like, you know.
I just got to get out of the apartment. I just rushed out of the apartment.
Right. Whoa.
And I'm also of going insane. Like, I'm afraid of getting Alzheimer's. So, like, when shit like this happens, it really gives me a panic attack.
Oh, I know.
I'm like, is this the first
time? Do you have a history of it in your family?
No.
No, but I agree with you. I think it would be the worst thing in the world to have. I think it'd be worse than having, like,
I've gone to bed. There was a time, like, a year ago, I went to bed at night. I woke up at, like, 4 in the morning, and it was freezing in my apartment.
Yeah.
And I could feel a breeze. And I open my eyes and I look over. My fucking front door is open. I'm in a studio apartment. My front door is open. And I'm like,
why?
Why is my door open? The keys are still in the door.
I've done that.
Like, I've done
that too.
I just left.
Yeah.
Have you done that thing where you walk into a room and you're like, why the fuck am I here?
Yeah.
All the time. Why am I in the kitchen? No. Am I hungry?
Yeah. Do the Times crossword puzzle on Sunday.
Yeah,
it helps
that's
your brain.
Supposed to be the preventative.
Yeah.
It really, it's like it's a workout for your brain. It's supposed to help make your synapses healthier.
Have either of you done those like those mental doodle thing like once mm-hmm. a day, like mind game thing? Those are all supposed to be really.
That's
good.
My Sunday puzzle. It takes me a couple of hours to do, but I can complete it.
Yeah, there was an app I had. I don't remember the name. That it was like weird games and like brain teasers.
Yeah,
but it's the way of all flesh. I'm 52. Mm-hmm. You said you're 47.
Yep.
And when I turned 50, my therapist, who's a much older man, got really excited because he's like, the 50s are great. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm not happy about turning 50. Because I turned 50 and I really wasn't happy about it.
No.
But now that I'm heading towards 52, I get it. The 50s are a big reset.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like he goes, you're a really young old person.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a young person anymore. You're just a really young old person, and you've had enough life experience to kind of know what you really want. You've hopefully had enough life experience where you don't delude yourself anymore into making the choices that you made previously, because it's like, well, I know where that leads to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like now, personally, I feel like I did when I was 30 about like, what's next? Like, I do feel a lot more optimistic.
Wow. My 40s have been rough. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, because I mean, I think it's that way for everyone is you mentally, you don't feel, you forget a little bit more.
Yeah.
And
how
stuff.
Old do you feel right now? Like what age
I still
do you feel
like I did when I was in like my 20s
Me
or
too.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I don't
sure.
feel any different.
Right.
I mean, because I work in a business where
it doesn't encourage you to grow up.
Yeah, it's a fairly young business. Yeah. It's a lot of the people I work with are younger, so I don't feel any older.
Mm-hmm.
But just saying, I'm fucking 47. When the fuck did that happen?
Right.
I did a show last night with Maya Rudolph.
Uh-huh.
And who I was in class at the Groundlings.
Oh, my God.
With.
I saw you and Maya in the trash show.
Oh,
I saw that sketch. The where she's in the wheelchair.
Yeah,
it's one of the greatest things I've ever.
I still
seen
have
in
that on
life.
Video. Type.
You do?
Yeah, I'm so
that
afraid.
Show,
of
what happened? The greatest things. Oh my God, I'm sorry to hijack your story, but you just said that. And I was like, oh my God, I remember seeing the two of you guys in together. The trash show, the Groundlings does it once a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a benefit show.
It's a benefit show. And it's like, the Groundlings are.
Oh, is it like the Beverly Winwood showcase? Because I've seen that a bunch of times.
I mean, it's
darker.
The Groundlings, it's like they hold themselves to this bar. They rarely go super blue, super mm-hmm. dirty, super edgy.
Once
a year, they do the trash show. It's at midnight and it's the grossest, vilest.
That's the
nastiest.
Aesthetic of the Groundlings. Like, that's it, something can be too, like, ugh, like they're
no, like, that's an, they'll I say that's an easy.
Yeah, they'll be like, that's a low percentage
low hanging
choice.
Fruit.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, I get
so
it.
They, you know, it's like, they'll definitely, and the Sunday company, they'll allow things to be a little bit edgier, but the main show, to the point, you know, because they have to, you know,
they got to make money.
They have to make money, but they also run the show for like 4 months. And so it's like, is this going to be worth it to run in the show? Do you, are you going to want to do this for four months?
Right.
Whereas in one night, so they put up the grossest things you can think of. And it's these brilliant comedic minds. They scour the audience for anyone taking, I didn't think they were allowed to videotape it because they have people, you know, that come back and like famous alums and they go on there and they just do the sickest shit you've seen. I mean, there's so many, I mean, just like necrophilia and just like so much cum flying around, nudity and everything.
It's my kind of show.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
But you and Maya's is maybe the smartest, sickest, worst thing ever.
Maya is... the sketch starts, the lights come up, and I'm on the phone with a friend, and I go, I have to go. My blind date's going to be here any second now. And then I hang up, the doorbell rings, I open it, and I go, oh, my blind date's going to be here. I'm going to take her to Runyon Canyon. So the doorbell rings, I open it, and it's Maya, and she's in a wheelchair. And by the way, we planned this where she's in a dress, so she's sitting on her legs in the chair. Like, she's sitting on her feet.
Okay.
And we made little tiny legs that hang down in these stockings, which by the time we did the show had stretched so long, her feet were dragging on the ground. And also, there was a few moments where people didn't know if they were supposed to laugh, so it would be really quiet, and she would wheel in, and it was super squeaky. Like, the only sound in the room was just...
And then you said something like, you said...
Oh, I am so mean to her.
You're so mean to her, you're like, I got a goddamn cripple.
Oh,
like,
no.
Like, you're immediately mean to her.
Yeah. I'm like, a cripple? I'm like, what the fuck?
It's theater of cruelty.
And then completely. It goes, she reveals that she's a virgin, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
And I try and fuck her. I pull my pants down and try and... I pull my dick out and I can't get a hard on.
Yeah, and then you like go down on her and you keep coming back up with more different things on your face.
Yeah, I go down on her and up with pudding, like tapioca, because she has a yeast infection.
I mean, it's literally like it's
so gross.
It's so, like, how many things can you think
and
of?
And that's below the bar for the groundling.
Yeah.
That's below the bar for
Yeah, but oh my God, I'll never forget that. I'm sorry, but anyway.
No, but it was just that I saw Maya a lot. I've known her, it's been 20 years now.
Yeah.
I'll show you a photo. I have a photo of Maya and I showed her this last night, of us, our friend DeMorge Brown took this photo.
I love DeMorge.
20 years ago.
What was the show you did that together last night?
She has a Prince cover band.
Oh, Princess.
Called Princess.
They're so great.
And
have you ever seen that, Alec, or heard of that? Maya and this woman, Gretchen. Gretchen Lieberum. Oh my God, look at you two. Amazing. Wow.
This is us on stage 20 years ago. We're both, and I showed it to her and we were both kind of depressed. We're like, fuck, you can see our necks.
Oh.
I was like, look at my jaw.
You're like Chris Pratt in this
picture. I was like maybe 220 pounds there.
Wow. You must have gotten laid a lot.
I did okay in my 20s.
I bet.
In my 20s. And then I took writing jobs and started just sitting and eating at my desk for 12 hours a day.
But also, like,
your metabolism changes when you hit 30.
Absolutely changes.
But you're like, we didn't know shit then. It's like the thing, and it's true. It's like youth is wasted on the young. It's so true because you're just like, you have no idea. First of all, when you looked like that, you had no idea you looked like that. You're right. Like, you look back and go, oh my God, I was so hot, or I was so good, or I was healthy. And at the time, you're like, I don't feel that way, or I didn't, you know, or at least that's what, you know. And you're, you know, broke and nervous.
Oh,
and,
so broke.
You know, at that point, you're
so
like,
broke.
Nobody's hiring me to do anything. Am I even talented? How long am I going to be doing this?
I'd never had an acting job
and
at that point.
Like, that's the thing, you know, like all of that stuff that we forget. I mean, I was just talking about earlier about, and I want to tell the story one day about waiting tables, you know, with heroin addicts in my 20s. And it was like, you know, that's the stuff now that you're like,
But that's what they're for. Nobody's together in their 20s. Everybody's a fucking car. You're a bumper car.
I don't think I would ever want to go back to my 20s.
No, you're
so much drama.
Yeah.
So much drama.
Relationships are a disaster.
A disaster. You're making horrible choices.
Yes.
And they're all based on your fucked up movies in your head. You know, it's just,
And I just think about like the people I was with and where we all were You know, and you just didn't have really this. You know, now you think, like, I have such a better judge of character. Mm-hmm. I don't have any friends that are mean to me. I used to have friends that were just fucking mean.
Yeah.
I had boyfriends who were mean to me.
And same here. I was infatuated plenty with every, oh God, if you gave me a little bit of attention and a lot of it was negative, I was way into that in my 20s. You know, and, you know, you just, that's the kind of stuff that, and I see, I have a lot of friends in their 20s and, cause I'm very cool. But I see that happening, and a lot of it you just kind of have to go.
You see a lot of unnecessary drama.
Unnecessary.
In their 20s. I have friends in their 20s as mm-hmm. well. I don't hang out with them a lot.
Me too.
But I saw one of them like totally bent out of shape, and he was so upset. And I'm like, "What the fuck is your problem?" He says, "I have to go to this party. It's all the way in Culver City." And I said, "And I said, don't go." And he goes, "I said I was going." I said, "Who gives a
Who
shit?
Who gives a shit?"
And he's going, "But my friend will be upset." I said, if your friendship is so fragile that if you don't go to a fucking party in Culver City for one fucking night, then that friendship isn't worth having.
Right, and you should absolutely not go to that party. I mean, like, why would you keep this thing going?
But I was like, don't go. How about that? Let's exhaust that possibility. And it didn't even occur to him that he could just go, you know what? I'm not going.
Right.
Exactly. I've had friends who were just sobbing and an emotional wreck after breaking up with a girlfriend or a boyfriend, and they're like 25, and I'm just like, just fucking wait. This is gonna happen like five more fucking times to you.
Yep.
You're gonna. This is teaching you your red flags. Yeah. You're gonna look back in 10 years at that person and go, I can't believe I cried.
Yeah. Yep. I did that so that I wouldn't do it again. Mm-hmm. Like, you do that so that you don't have to go through, if you're smart.
Yeah. It's, you know, so we're doing great. You guys, come on. We're doing great.
Doing great. I would like a big bag of cash. I think that would make life a lot easier. I have a house. House doesn't solve everything, but a big bag of cash would be helpful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That would be helpful.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Would you ever quit? What would make you walk away from everything?
I don't think anything would at this point.
Really?
Sadly. Disgustingly. You know what? No, because I can't imagine what else I would do.
Yeah.
And I think if I quit, I would spend every day of my life, every time I watched a movie, every time I would turn on TV, I'd be like,
I want to play.
Why am I not doing that anymore? Why am I not a part of this? And I was always loved all my life. Thank you, parents and friends, but never really encouraged to do this. That all came from within me.
Yeah.
So I never had anybody that I was like impressing.
Right.
And everybody was like, you're smart. Go do something else. Go, you know, be a professor or whatever.
Right.
Do
right.
something else. Like, so I was the one going, I want to perform and write and be creative for a living. And that was so in me from day one that I can't imagine.
Somebody asked me recently what I liked most about show business, and the first thing that came to my mouth was hanging out.
Yeah.
Like when you have a job and you're just hanging out with people on the set.
And the people you meet and the stories you hear.
I would totally quit.
Yeah.
You would?
I would quit.
If I could make enough money that I wouldn't have to work again, because I've been all over the country and there's some cool places I would love to live.
Mm-hmm. No, you're very right about that. I hate
here.
That we have to live mm-hmm. here. I mean, I do love a
Where
lot
would
of
you
LA,
live? Where else would you live?
I don't know. I mean, I've spent time in Nova Scotia, which is fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
There's places in Canada that I fucking love.
West Coast, East Coast.
Maybe West Coast, but like Pacific Northwest.
Right.
Or I just recently went to Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, Asheville's the greatest.
Fuck.
It's beautiful.
I love it, but
I love Asheville.
But legislative wise, North Carolina is a fucking garbage.
It's a nightmare. Transgender people can't take
North Carolina,
a shit.
North Carolina is in a really rough place because the lines are so drawn in the sand there because the amount of.
Because
liberals.
You go to a college town and it's like you're in San Francisco. Everybody's so incredibly
And my
cool.
brother and sister-in-law, they're fighting the good fight because they you know, you go to every house and it is a Hillary sign and Trump sign, you know, for in this last example, and they are firmly planted in the ground and there's no in between.
Right.
And there is no, and I mean, the people there who are, you know, liberal-minded, forward-thinking, they work really... I mean, there are a lot of them there.
Yeah.
And they are... The government in North Carolina has just been so screwed up.
The whole country's North Carolina right now. That's what's happening. And if there's any progressive agenda that's going to move forward at all within the next 4 years or 6 months or however long he's president, it's up to us.
Absolutely.
It's not up to the people in
and
power.
And the thing is, it's like we should have known that always. And we sort of let 8 years go by where we had this amazing man.
We fell asleep at the switch.
You know, yeah, we were like, mm-hmm. oh, Obama's going to take care of us. Mm-hmm. Obama has this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I love it. It's like, even today he presented, you know, did you guys see that he announced?
I haven't watched television.
There's a thing he put online called, it's like the Obama Legacy or something. Yeah. It's their foundation. And basically it's about, this is how, it's very JFK. It's like, this is not about how I'm going to help you. It's about how we're going to help you help yourselves and how you're going to help each other mm-hmm. and join this group. It's amazing. And of course, it's like the day he leaves, he's like, I'm still here, but, you know, now it's on you.
Right.
And it's a thing that we have to do that. And
yeah.
we have to take care of each other. And it is local. It's not about what's happening in Washington. It never mm-hmm. has been. For art,
right.
oh, come on. Like, anything comes out of Washington that we, you know.
And art and always gets freaky and amazing when there's conservative people.
It gets great. And we have
power.
To remember that. And yeah. we have to remember that, like, you know, let's fucking be Karen Finley and shove avocados up our yeah. twats or whatever we have to do now to call it, you know. Let's fucking, you know, let's do it. That's
just
our,
don't
that's our
eat
job.
Six cookies or four squares.
Always ask,
are there drugs in this?
That really made me ask every time I see a cookie in front of me. I'm like, is
it
this
made
regular?
You doubt cookies.
Yeah, it ruined cookies.
It made you doubt cookies.
Oh, lesson of the day, always
thing.
Doubt cookies.
Mm. That's a terrible thing.
Well, you guys, we're out of time. But
holy
I want to thank
shit.
You both so much
yeah,
for coming on and doing this.
This has been
scintillating. Wonderful.
It's too bad
great.
We weren't drinking.
I know, exactly. thank you. But I want to thank my guests, Alec Mappa and Steve Agee.
Thank you
all so much for doing this. And,
my pleasure.
Happy weekend. And let's do this. Let's get through this. Right?
All right.
Yay.
Love you, Drew.
Love y'all.
Bye.
Bye.